two interviews today. Later, Eureka Symphony will present two of Beethoven's best-known chamber works for its annual benefit chamber music concert, scheduled for this Sunday, January 29th, at 3 p.m. at the Eureka Woman's Club. The trio is Terry Bond, violin, Carol Jacobson, cello, and John Chernoff, piano. First today, Ferndale Repertory Theater and Arcata Playhouse present Arthur Miller's drama, All My Sons, opening this Friday, January 27th, and running through Sunday, February 5th, at FRT, and then it will perform February 10th through the 19th at Arcata Playhouse. My guests are the play's director, Jane Hill, who is co-founder and former executive director of Del Arte. Also here is her daughter, artistic producing director of Ferndale Repertory Theater, Lyra Satloff, whom Jane is directing in All My Sons. We begin with a discussion of two major themes in the play, and Jane responds first. Money and morality. That is a timely topic. That's a timeless topic.
Money. Both those things.
Used to be timeless, and now it's timely.
Yeah. Yeah. And the play is All My Sons, and that is Arthur Miller. And why don't we start out by talking about how the action of this play relates to the ideas of money and morality. What's going on, Jane?
Well, what he's done that's quite brilliant is he has put that whole question in the context of a series of family and neighborhood relationships. So it's not theoretical. It's very human. There is a man who has done something immoral and possibly illegal for what he believes is the benefit of his family, particularly his remaining son. He's had one son who died in the war, a pilot. And as the layers get peeled away, you find out that there are a lot more people who know about this than have admitted they know about it. There are a whole series of things that people are very careful not to discuss. They're all likable characters who have their own moral center, but when you look at the larger issue, everybody is off base a bit.
Well, what I'm wondering, and this, since this was sent out with the press release, I don't believe we're going to be giving anything away that people won't already have seen when they see preview material about this, but okay, All My Sons, it first premiered in New York City in 1947. It's based on a true 1944 scandal of the Wright Aeronautical Corporation, where domestic producers colluded with Army inspection officers to deploy defective aircraft engines during World War II.
Right.
I'm confused there, but deploy to whom?
To the U.S. Army Air Force.
So that they would order more and more
so
money.
That they would meet, you know, it was a very tough time in the war, and the Army was really pressed to get this equipment in the air and functioning. And so what happened was that they cut back the number of inspectors at these plants who were supposed to look at the parts that went into these planes. Primarily the biggest problem were planes that were called P-40s. And because they cut back on the inspections, and in some cases there was collusion between manufacturers and the inspectors and the Army. It was a very complicated tangle of collusion and looking the other way to get these planes in the air. And they couldn't keep up with the number that were needed for manufacture. There was tremendous pressure on the people who were making these parts. And in this case, the one that Miller has chosen to talk about was a man who was producing, a part to go into these planes. And they came out of the process flawed. And he told his partner to weld over them and send them on. Now, he says he thought they would be caught by the inspectors. But, I mean, he doesn't mention inspectors. But he thought they'd be caught before they went into the planes. But because of what we know about the true case, we know that they wouldn't have been caught, that this was his hope, perhaps maybe based on information or not. But they went into the planes, and 21 of those planes crashed and killed the pilots. So this is a classical case of war profiteering. I mean, before even it was a question of fraud, it was a question of profiteering.
But what's at stake is the loss of his business, because because what there is to be sold at this moment in time for his manufacturing company is these engine parts. And so if he turns out bad engine parts, they cancel his contract, and then suddenly he's out of business. So that's the metric for him to try to figure out, you know, this is the risk he takes to send on these parts in the hopes that he gets his situation worked out so that he's creating good parts again, and then everything would be fine.
And Lyra, what is your character in this play?
I play that man's wife. I play Kate Keller. The man we've been talking about, his name is Joe Keller, and I play Kate Keller. And it was very upsetting to me to hear you describe us as having only one son. Kate Keller actually, she has a strong sense of the universal, of things that could happen. So she makes a correlation between Joe's actions and the disappearance, as she would frame it, of their son, who was a pilot and who they know went down, but they don't have a body. And she doesn't believe he's dead, because she makes a correlation between if Joe, in fact, did something wrong, which she's not quite ready to say at the beginning of the play, then his wrong actions somehow caused the death of their son.
So, Lyra, you're playing a character of, you a non-singing character.
For the second time in my life.
Really? So primarily your roles have been singing roles.
Yes. I realized a few weeks ago when I was struggling to achieve the necessary for this role, that this is only the second time that I have done a principal role. I've done some little things here and there, but a principal role that is a non-singing role. And I tell you, I have renewed respect for what actors go through. And it's a great reminder for me, you know, who often works with actors and directs things and so on, to remember what it is that actors have to go through to master a part and really, you know, create depth and know their lines and work with props and...
Well, you used the word struggle, and you turned your head to the side of struggle. And so what kind of struggle, talk about the struggle that you've gone through to do a non-singing character, because I'm thinking, well, when we're talking singing, we're talking musicals.
Right.
Right? And musicals,
or operas, yeah.
And they include movement. They include virtually everything, even some talking. So,
right. So, but here's the thing. It is very much easier to master something in which the cadence of what you're speaking has already been decided by a composer, in which the rhyme scheme has already been decided by a brilliant lyricist that makes it so much easier to remember things. Like, I don't know, is Shakespeare easier to remember because there's a rhyme scheme?
It's good.
Oh, yeah, there you go. And the characters are different. You know, you tend not to know as much about a character in a musical than you know about Kate Keller, for example. And it's not that an actor wouldn't go through the same depth of exploration in order to understand that character in a musical and play it. But I feel like the demands are different.
Have you ever been directed by your mother?
I think when I was... Did you direct that Threepenny? Yes. So when I was 12, my first time on the main stage, actually, was as a whore in Threepenny Opera at the Kuala
Lumpur
Festival.
And she was excellent.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So, yes, but it's been a while.
Well, whose idea was it for, did you approach Lyra and say you're going to...
Yeah, Ms. Hill.
In her wildest dreams. She approached me and she told me all kinds of things that weren't true to convince me to do it. Like, you know, as you know, Wendy, I also work for the Eureka Symphony, and I, in addition, now I have another job. But she told me that nothing important would happen until after the holiday concert of the Eureka Symphony, and then the May before that announced that there were auditions. And I said, I haven't read this play for 30 years. How can I go to auditions? And it was sort of like trickled out like that all the way through, including...
That's not significant, is it?
Mm-hmm. And she did have something, I think... scheduled to a rehearsal scheduled on the night of the dress rehearsal for the symphony's holiday concert, and I just said I won't be there. So, you know, we've had a few things to work out like that. She meant well, but you know, I've known her a long time, and I'll tell you, she will twist the truth to get what she wants. Like Kate Keller.
What kind of notes do you give Lyra? You know,
I give her the same notes I'd give any actor. I mean, I have to say she's going to be wonderful in this role, and it has been it's been great to work for her. She's taken very little of my attention, time and attention. I've had to spend much more time and attention on some other actors because she's good and she watches what's going on and she listens to the other actors, and she doesn't play it like an opera, which is a set piece and you kind of know the general emotional quality. The thing about a play is the emotional quality of any moment can change from night to night depending on what's happening between you and a fellow actor. And
the audience.
And the audience, right. Yeah, that's one of the things that's going to, I think, be a little bit of a shock for these actors, even though they know it's true, is there's a lot of funny stuff in this play. It's a serious play that has a lot of comic moments. And I think when they hear the audience reaction to some of those things, they're going to have to fight to keep their concentration.
Yeah, allow the audience the luxury of reacting and laughing, but not talk over the audience while the audience is laughing.
Or let it disrupt what you're working on stage, what your intentions are.
Yeah, because sometimes it's funny, but it's not funny in the sort of self-aware way that comedy can kind of be, right? So Kate says some fairly caustic things that I'm sure will get a laugh, but Kate actually does not intend them as jokes in any way.
Yeah. Is Kate at all like you, Lyra?
Kate is a lot like me. I wish I had it sitting here. The Miller's description of Kate when she first enters the play, he has in italics a little description of her, something about her having an unending capacity for love and I don't remember, it was something about the way she thinks about the world. Anyway, there are certainly similarities. I certainly think Kate gets upset a lot. And holding that space of being upset and getting to that space of being upset is not the easiest thing to access always. And so I sometimes think of my own son and my own children and, you know, so we have similarities there. I think that she... how else are we similar?
I'm not going to say.
I think that Kate wants to run things is frustrated when she can't run things in a way that she, you know, control things in a way that she would like. And I certainly have that quality.
Yes, you do.
Jane, your connection with All My Sons, have you directed it in the past or performed or been involved in
it? No, never. In fact, I don't think I've ever directed an Arthur Miller play. Maybe I might have done View from the Bridge many, many years ago. And probably the public knows View from the Bridge and The Crucible, you know, more than they know All My Sons. All My Sons was his first Broadway hit. But he's a deep playwright, and he has a lot of integrity about subject matter and the things that he cares about, it's little details like the fact there's a tree when you come in and see the set that has been blown over by the wind. And when you read his autobiography and things written about him, when he lived in Brooklyn, one of the things he did was build a back porch and plant things and, you know, flowers and trees, their pear tree. And this apple tree being snapped by the wind, blown over by the wind, is something that he actually experienced. So he puts many of those kind of little details into his plays that give them a kind of humanity and depth and personal character traits that I think make them particularly rich for actors to work on.
And when you say that, the play with which I have the most familiarity is Death of a Salesman.
Yes.
And you were talking about this, we were talking about the story
right.
behind this play and just different things, details that you were just talking. I was thinking about Death of a Salesman and Willie Loman.
Right. People he knows, characters he's seen, things he's experienced in his life, and he knows how to use them in a way that's very moving. I think this play is tremendously moving. We talked in the beginning about the fact you could do this as a play set in 2017, just because we have war profiteering issues now, and the characters are all. Quite contemporary in terms of, their thinking and their emotional relationships. So part of what interested me is to say his audience didn't need a context. They saw it in 1947, and the play is set in 1946. It's a post-World War II context and situation. So I didn't really want to upgrade it. I want today's audiences to find what the commonalities are to those years, to those eras. And, to that end, I'm using pre-show music that's 1946 music. And I really want to set the mood. The costumes will be period costumes. I want people to feel like they've gone back in time and in that process recognize things that are still current about the human condition and human dilemmas.
Jane Hill, director of Ferndale Repertory Theater and Arcata Playhouse's production of Arthur Miller's All My Sons. Also here has been Jane's daughter and an actor in this play, Lyra Satloff. The performance opens this Friday at 8 p.m. at Ferndale Rep and continues for 2 weekends with Sunday performances at 2 p.m. It then moves to the Arcata Playhouse beginning Friday, February 10th at 8 p.m. for 2 weekends. The Sunday performances are at 2. The final performance is Sunday, February 19th. Current and former members of the American Armed Forces are welcome to see All My Sons completely free of charge for the Ferndale Repertory Theater shows. By making reservations in advance and showing valid military ID at the door. For reservations and ticket information for all performances, both in Ferndale and Arcata, visit ferndalerep.org or phone 786-5483. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves on KHSU. Eureka Symphony will present 2 of Beethoven's best-known chamber works for its annual benefit chamber music concert, scheduled for this Sunday, January 29th at 3 p.m. at the Eureka Woman's Club. The concert trio is composed of Terry Bonn on violin, Carol Jacobson on cello, and John Chernoff on piano. Carol and John are in the studio. And Terry is with us by phone. And she responds first. We're talking about putting together 2 works by Beethoven, and one is titled yes. Kreutzer.
Ah. Yeah, it's been subtitled the Kreutzer Sonata. Rudolf Kreutzer was a violinist and was the person to whom the sonata was eventually dedicated, although it really should have been called the Bridgetower Sonata because it was intended for George Bridgetower. And George Bridgetower actually premiered it with Beethoven. And he was quite a flamboyant figure.
Yeah.
Bridgetower, he billed himself as the son of an African prince, but probably wasn't exactly that.
And so Beethoven, Carol, before we started recording, you said something to me about why this was a good time to play Beethoven.
Well, I mean, I just think Beethoven is a wonderful composer to be thinking about and playing, because he truly believed in the brotherhood of man. And in fact, you know, the entire Ninth Symphony, which we will be doing in May, is dedicated to that premise. And I just think this is a great time to be thinking about that. And the Archduke Trio that we're going to be playing is absolutely stunning. It's one I've always wanted to learn and perform, and I've never done it before. And I couldn't think of two more wonderful people to do it with than Terry and John.
Well, I know Terry talked a little bit about the backstory behind the Kreutzer piece. Now, the Archduke Trio was dedicated to Archduke. I'm reading what was sent to me, by the way. I don't know this without having this in front of me.
I'm learning lots from this, actually.
The Archduke, okay. It was dedicated to Archduke Rudolf, who is one of Beethoven's most stalwart patrons and a serious amateur pianist. Rudolf took regular lessons from Beethoven, sometimes so many that Beethoven despaired of getting other things done and also initiated the regular stipend that was paid to him by several prominent noblemen to keep him living and working in Vienna.
Man.
Yeah, there are, that's all true. I mean, I'll attest to it because I wrote it, right? There are several letters from Beethoven to various people talking about the length of the lessons that he has to give Archduke Rudolf when Rudolf is in town. Fortunately for him, Rudolf travels a lot, but there is ample evidence that he spent a lot of time with Rudolf, and that sometimes there were other duties that he was trying to get done that were made more difficult because of the demands on his time.
But it's really,
they had a really good relationship.
Yeah, I was going to say that you can tell from the writing and the quality of the melodies and things that he really liked Rudolf, in spite of the fact that he may have wished he wasn't in town so much, but that he really had an affection for this man.
Yes, and both ways. It went both ways. I mean, Rudolf was part of the reason that I said he was one of his most stalwart patrons, is that he did really, he looked out for Beethoven, and he defended him when necessary. Along with believing in the brotherhood of man, goes sometimes not quite kowtowing to authority as much as some of the authority figures think he should. And Rudolf was someone who really stood up for Beethoven if he got in trouble with other members of the aristocracy.
Uh-huh.
So they clearly both.
And good man to have on your side.
Yeah, particularly.
You don't want to get in trouble with the aristocracy.
No, not a good idea.
How many years have the three of you been doing the trio, doing this this type of concert together?
Ooh. I don't remember.
I think it's been a while, at least 3 or 4 years.
More than that.
Oh, is it more? Okay.
Yeah.
Five. Perhaps at least 5 years. It's a blur, but everything's a blur right now because it's very blurry outside. I just wrote it a lot of blur. And,
I think John may be close to being right on that one. This is probably either the fifth or sixth of our annual trio concert.
Yes, I think that's true.
Well, how is the relationship of you, the three of you, as musicians, how has it developed over the years of performing together? What kind of things have changed?
That's an interesting question.
I feel much more comfortable now playing with these guys, and I'm totally. When I first started playing, I had all my own ideas. I want to do this, I want to do that, and it should go like this. No, and that's too much time. Blah, blah, blah. And now I really trust them so much, and everything they say, I really view now with an open mind. And I find myself very rarely, occasionally, but very rarely disagreeing with you know what they have to say interpretively. And Terry's got fabulous ears, and so if she says I'm too low, I'm too low. She says I'm too high. I know I'm too high. You know, so it's great. You know, I really, I feel so great, and I feel like we communicate really well about our musical ideas, and I feel like we're all excited, usually, about the music that we're playing. Because we choose things that we want to play, and I just, and I think we all have a certain excitement about what we're doing together, and that we, speaking for myself, really like working with each other.
I'll second that. This is by far my favorite group of all the groups that I work with, and I too feel that part of that is because we have come to really trust each other's judgment and each other's suggestions, and you know, I can be very pig-headed, and I've learned over the years with Carol and John that I don't need to be so pig-headed, and maybe they're actually hearing something that I'm not. I do feel, I mean, over this working relationship, we have come to trust each other and to really enjoy listening to each other, and I think that's what it's all about.
Well, one thing which I think is very, very interesting about a piano trio, for you know, from the perspective of a pianist, is, you know, normally if I talk about music with somebody, they're usually going to be a different instrumentalist than myself. I mean, because I don't normally play with a piano or something. Occasionally I will, like once in a while I'll do like a piano duo or something, but those are relatively uncommon. And one thing is that when discussing music in a group, it's actually very nice to be talking to somebody who doesn't play your instrument in many ways, because what it does is it gets you out of the technical aspects of what you're doing to some degree and makes you think about things on a somewhat higher level. And both Terry and Carol were fantastic at this, at kind of bringing me out of the technical ruts that I might be experiencing and getting me out of just thinking of things in terms of piano playing. And I think that's one of the most valuable things about a chamber group. And just for musicians in general to experience and be reminded of. So I find that to be one of the most valuable things and something which I increasingly experience with this group.
John Chernoff, pianist. Also here have been his concert trio partners, Terry Bond, violinist, and Carol Jacobson, cellist. Eureka Symphony's annual benefit chamber music concert is this Sunday, January 29th at 3 p.m. at the Eureka Woman's Club. For information and tickets, visit eurekasymphony.com. Thank you for listening. I'm Wendy Butler, producer, engineer, and host of Art Waves, broadcast each Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. on KHSU and streaming live and archived shows available on our website, and that's khsu.org.
Listener-supported Diverse Public Radio for the North Coast of California and South Coast of Oregon. This is KHSU and KHSU HD 90.5 Arcata, KHSR 91.9 Crescent City, and KHSG 89.9 Garberville. Donors include Six Rivers Optical, offering a large selection of eyewear, sunglasses, and contact lenses. Also, same-day service is available for prescriptions in stock. Six Rivers Optical, celebrating over 34 years of keeping life in focus. Open Monday through Saturday on Harrison Avenue next to Lima's Pharmacy in Eureka. Learn more at sixriversoptical.com. And donors include Eureka's Black Fawn Gallery, presenting Affinity and Novelty, colorful abstract oil paintings by Ferndale artist Andre Hedstrom through January 28th. Learn more at blackfawnart.com. You're listening to KHSU in a time that would normally be How to Breathe Underwater with Gobi Blank. I am filling in this week. This is Mike Rock, and we've got quite a bit to do, so let's get down to it. This is Smashing Pumpkins with Drown. Once again, filling in for Gobi Blank this week. This is Mike Rock.